Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about A Tale of Two Blue Mountain Lookouts. This is more a podcast to give some background to what could be a rather cryptic YouTube that or video, as the younger people call them, that I've uploaded to YouTube. The actual video itself starts off with a map of Australia on Google Earth, and a screenshot as that zooms into a lookout on Three Sisters in the Blue Mountains. I'll give you a bit more background. The idea of this podcast is multifold. I'll give you what you get out of it and what I get out of it, but the overall view, it goes into a zoom in from outer space into the Three Sisters, you can see there, and then it takes, I think, three panoramas from the Three Sisters. Now, the Three Sisters refer to a rock formation, which is, in fact, four little rock outcrops. The fourth one's really small, and so that's one of the immediate things that I suppose a more questioning person comes along. That you immediately count Three Sisters and count one, two, three. There's three large ones and obviously a slightly smaller one that goes there, and then you pan across seeing the Jameson Valley. The most interesting thing here, I suppose, is the soundscape of the sheer number of people, the mountain out of chatter. And then at the end of this, after three scans, to give some sort of a sense of the scale of this, you're taking 3 kilometres via Google Earth again, in lieu of a car journey. I don't know how you do that cinematographically. And then a similar double shot of the next lookout along, which is Boar's Head Lookout. And we'll just go into that. So what you'll get out is, so out of this is in YouTube, some YouTube land, in podcast land, is an overview. What I'll get out of it is a basic cognitive rehab, just getting in to stitch together a series of things, operating a camera for the first time, in a fair while, integrating that into a story, and then having a recall and an analysis of that part of getting back on track. So that's my benefit by actually sitting back and talking and producing all of this. Now we start off with Australia. So I think something around 50 million years ago, so on that 50, 70 million years ago, we separated from Antarctica, which is the southern continent, which is Gondwana land. It began to drift forward. It's relevant to the Blue Mountains. Australia was two raised sections around Perth, a very big shallow sea, and then a little bit of a range around the east coast. So in this shallow sea was very important because the existence of this shallow sea early on, I think before we even separated from the south continent, meant that there was a shallow sea, and this was meant a very high temperature. Very high temperature meant extreme weather systems and a large amount of rainfall. So the event of such a large shallow sea had a profound impact on Earth's climate. I think this is before the Carboniferous period, so this is like you have to go back, that life on Earth is 600 million years. This is multicellular life. You have various explosions of genetic diversity, 550 million years ago. So all that So the idea for a billion years, what the Earth is 4.3 billion years or 4.6 billion years, and the letter, a prefix is giga, capital G. So it's 4.6 billion years old, and life on Earth perhaps 3.5 years. That's the very first archaic cells. Then you have an oxygen event where the Earth's atmosphere swung onto oxygen, but it's still single cell, multicellular, about 0.6 years ago, 0.55 years ago, you had multicellular stuff, 500 years ago, you had sea organisms 0.3 years ago. You had the Carboniferous era. Oops, I just got to get this up. I think it must be, we've got to get the time correct. The Carboniferous era is really important because that lays the very underneath of the Blue Mountains. So underneath the Blue Mountains are these two large coal seams which extend hundreds of kilometres. So the Blue Mountains National Park itself is 80 to 100 kilometres across and 400 kilometres north-south. I may be wrong there, maybe 300 kilometres north-south as you go. So it's a very large national park. I read somewhere it's the size of Connecticut or one of these smaller US states, but this is a national park park there. And so Australia's steaming north, and as we steam north, this has been pushed by plate tectonics. So plate tectonics explains the phenomena of continental drift. So continental drift is what you see. So the car moving along, it's motion, so like a car moving along. Plate tectonics is the actual propulsion method. Australia as a continent is fairly benign continent, but as we go forward, we go over one of Earth's hot spots. Now, for us, that doesn't really affect our continental plate tectonics. So a continental plate has, it's a lower density, but it's lower density and protrudes more deeply into the Earth, into the mantle. It's like thick, I think it's 5 to 1. So if you've got, if you're above, 1 kilometre above sea level, that's 5 kilometres beneath. If you're 8 kilometres above sea level, a bit like Mount Everest, that's 40 kilometres deep. That's the continental crust. That may be a factor of 10, depending how you define things. Now, the important thing is that India broke off at the same time as Australia, but it went fully over a hot spot. It ripped out. It's changed the dynamics of the Indian continent, which meant that it accelerated much faster and was pushed up and pushed up into Asia. There was again a shallow sea in that area, and India pushed up, uplifting this shallow sea. So the surface of Mount Everest is a sedimentary rock up there, and you can get fish fossils all the way up the top there, and you similarly get fish fossils in the centre of Australia. So the centre of Australia has fish bone fossils, and those fish bone fossils, in the right conditions, you get a silica substitution, iron exchange with it, and the formation of opals. So in Australia, there's a lot of opals in Australia, and I do recommend getting at least one of them to have. It's a of all your gems, this is one gem which says it's a diffraction grating. And there's a lot of optics in it. But the Blue Mountains came along, and so this is the Carboniferous area. We still haven't separated off yet. I've got the order a bit off back to front, and this is the time before Australia rebounded off Gondwana land. So around where we are at the Blue Mountains was the highest point on the earth, a couple of kilometres higher than possibly 10 kilometres up rather than 8 kilometres up for Mount Everest, a very high mountain of sandstone, and this huge river came across from the back of the Blue Mountains. On one side of the Blue Mountains, this is higher than Mount Everest, and this huge river with all this rainfall from the big shallow sea at the back of Australia came and created a very thick river which flowed in sort of two stages. So you've got the coal seams, then about 500 metres thick of this very pure sandstone. So even today you can dig away at the sandstone and crush it up in your hands. Now the strength of sandstone is essentially, you can have the individual grains are very, very strong. It's the strength of the cement in your sandstone. And so because this river was so pure, we didn't have the flux agents in the nanoparticles. So you've got your big sand particles, and then you've got nanoparticles which surround it, which are dirt, and these nanoparticles react and pick up ions. Any pollutants are picked up. This is very fine nanofiltering. So it filters minerals which are washed and blown into this area. Then when this heats up, these nanoparticles form a glass, and form a glass glue around your glass particle, your quartz particles. So sandstone is actually, low sandstone is by definition metamorphic. Is sedimentary in nature because the sand gets there and it's shaped by a river. The actual process of making sandstone is a degree of metamorphic action on the sandstone. So this is really intense if you're trying to work out what's going on. This has all come together. So the very first sections of this river, there wasn't a lot of dirt in it. It's very pure sandstone, so the layer above the coal seams is 500 metres or so, a very soft, you know, extremely soft, then above that the conditions changed. Winds blew in from another direction, so there was a lot of iron in with the glass, made a stronger frit. A frit is the word for you get very fine particles, grind them up together, and then that melts at a lowest temperature. And so I think that's the Hawkesbury River sandstone. I can't quite remember the thing. So it's a layer cake with coal from the Carboniferous era. So I've got to remember that's obviously land plants have come on. And then this area is a huge riverbed, and there's no necessarily river fossils, not because there's no animals, but the actual other minerals necessary to make fossils aren't there. But if you pick up rocks in the Blue Mountains, right down the bottom of these valleys, you can see little embedded in the rock, tiny little river stones, little generally river stones. If you have a gravel driveway, so you don't hurt your feet, you can walk on it. All the river stones are nice and polished. It's polished sandstones. So that's built up, and so this river, so this has subsided. Australia bounces off, the mountains drop off as we spring. So if you can imagine the mountains falling and springing Australia off Antarctica, a big rift valley would go. So it's fairly benign until not many million years, like 100 million years ago, or 200 million years ago, the eastern seaboard, that's the right-hand seaboard of Australia, went across a hotspot, and this hotspot caused volcanic activity. And so the oldest volcanoes, which means the first volcanoes, are at the top of Queensland, and there's just this volcanic chain down, and the volcanoes are shield volcanoes, so there's not much spectacular. They're not cone volcanoes, although there's a few, you can look out and see a few cone volcanoes. And of course, in the Blue Mountains, if you look around on the horizon, there's volcano. People don't see them as active volcanoes, but there's this lovely thick basalt soil, and it's some island of highly fertile soil. The rest of the Blue Mountains is unfertile soil. This comes along and this pushes up the Blue Mountains up, and of course, so the Blue Mountains, it's got uplift, and then the water going along the Blue Mountains cuts down into it, and this is an important point. So in general, there are two types of, there's the I don't know if you've ever played in the sand and pour water in, you can get this complicated pattern. So the Blue Mountains is extremely complicated. It's almost, well, legendary has it that it wasn't navigable, but that's probably not true. So you've got those features, but you also have fault features. And when a fault is a nice linear thing, so you can get these relatively linear rivers flowing, or river, a dam flowing, these around a fault, and or a dam flowing. We've built a dam over a linear river, so Warragamba Dam is a very huge, long river. I think everything is always more than Sydney Harbour. Upper value, but the fractal pattern is repeated in Botany Bay and Port Jackson, which is where the Opera House is. That complicated features, and so if you go up to Katoomba, so that's the peak of the Blue Mountains, so you can see 800 meters down. It's more than half a kilometer down. It's a fair drop to the bottom there, to the surface of the alluvial fan, and then you right get down. So you can, and through this lookout, you can see these cliffs, which is due to the cliffs are caused by the wear resistant sandstone, the more recent sandstone, which has the iron in its frit, and then that's undercut by the, so it erodes more quickly at the bottom, and so this shears down. Very similar type of thing has happened at Niagara Falls. In this case, the mineral in question is magnesium, and then magnesium's added with whatever, I don't know what dolomite is, I have to think about it. But it's made the top of Niagara Falls more wear resistant, and it goes down and it undercuts, and it's very strong, except the entire thing shears and collapses down. And shearing and faulting means that the water goes in these cracks, and of course going in successive cracks and wearing away gives you these features, which are the Three Sisters, which you can see. And you can look out across to these valleys, and so the Blue Mountains system of canyons is the second biggest in the world after obviously the Grand Canyon. But you can stand on these vistas and see really out onto these ranges forever. And people go up to the Three Sisters because that's what's got bus parking and stuff like that. It's got the Three Sisters, easy to identify, and you go up there. So the erosion of the soft stuff is called these alluvial fans, and then you've got the hardened sandstone creating these cliffs. And you can see sort of leaching through these cliffs and various things like this. But this erosion pattern has caused the Three Sisters. And we went up to the cultural centre up there. This is something that tourists don't go to, but sort of locals know about going to the cultural centre. So this is at Katoomba at the top, and Katoomba around 1907 had a, I'm just trying to think, yeah, 1907 had a high school. The high school's relevant because that's the site of the cultural centre. They had a high school. The high school was built, it went through a series of things. There were flu epidemics and TB epidemics in Australia, even plague. There were things like this. Sydney was an amazing place. People, the rich people, would send their children up to the Blue Mountains to avoid epidemics. So the school swelled from 60 to 160, like this. Then it went relatively well. Great Depression came along, so everyone lost all their money. So Australia went very badly in the Great Depression because, patriotically, we repatriated all our capital. So, say a expanding country like Australia needs lots of capital to keep growing, but when the Great Depression came along, we actually repatriated all our capital. We had fundraisers and basically sucked. So what you would do in a depression, in a financial crisis, is you stop the flight of money, whereas we just try to help the UK by putting all our money to... So we had a dreadful depression, perhaps worse than the US depression, which wound up doing the same sort of policies, but with a bit more panache. And of course, this is a lesson very, very strongly learnt. So Australia builds from this, builds up a cash reserve. And when we had the global financial crisis, people had resources ahead, because we had such a bad thing in the Great Depression, and so just money flowed. Everyone in the country got checks for money. Money was just given to people. I think we had $10,000 given to us, and we got our house painted smoked lavender with our $10,000 of just money. Was just given to people. And the reason it was given to people, it was if you give it to government, they take about 6 months to spend it. If you give it to people, they spend it pretty much immediately. And so Australia avoided the global financial crisis, and it's only now, 10 years later, that we've finally paying off our global financial crisis, that type of stuff. But the school went up. So the Great Depression meant that it was took all the students out, then back. So the school went up and down, yo-yo. Eventually it closed in 62 because they had another site for it. And so if you imagine, this school was at Katoomba when it was a bit landlocked. And so you have this site sitting here with the old school, and you have this, the value of the land, if you could sell the value of the land, stuff like that. So what they've done is they've built a big shopping centre underneath it, and above the shopping centre you can go up. And so there's these tiny signs about, I don't know, half a metre across, saying cultural centre. You follow them through, you have to really look, know where to look. You get in a lift and you go up to this fantastic. So it's a supermarket, food court below, above is, it's so nothing's happening underneath this beautiful community space of a beautiful library. View of the Blue Mountains, again, and the cultural centre, where it says, amongst other things, how the cultural centre was built. And you, read about that. So I'm just putting that in as a bookmark for people, and you can go in and read some sort of very detailed stories about some of the communities, groups and people people like that go in there. It costs a little to go in. So, oh, I don't know. I think gold coin donation or something like that to go in. Again, perhaps it's for Australians to look at and contemplate. And so they get the various stories. And of course, there's a lot of things that people believe about the Blue Mountains which aren't true. There's a sort of a central myth of the people trying to get across the Blue Mountains but failing until these people came across. And it sort of like there was all these rumours of people getting across the Blue Mountains, people they didn't want, and then the government official people got across the Blue Mountains, and then it allowed the official rollout of white power across the Blue Mountains. So there's sort of a cleansing story there, Aboriginal stuff. And then after that, in Katoomba, we went to the top of this lookout, and I panned across. You could see the Three Sisters. You can see where the erosion has come, creating a big basin where the drains out. There's a beautiful, cool stream right at the bottom, like it was fiercely hot where we were. And the important thing is that you've got so many tourists here. So going from this quiet, contemplating place with few tourists, no, there is no tourist parking to get into the cultural centre. It is purely, I don't know what it is. No one has actually, teed it up with cultural people to go there. But I would recommend if you do come up here, go up to the Blue Mountains. So you'll see this here, and this is where Google Maps sort of shows you where in Australia the Blue Mountains are. And so the Blue Mountains, there's a Blue Mountains National Park, which is a reasonable size national park, but there's a system of 6 or 8 national parks linked together. So we're in the southern one, penultimate, we're second bottom of the heap of these parks, well, probably the third bottom of the park. So there's a system of 4 parks around us, including the Dunolan Cave, which is this fairly incredible cave system up there. It's also interesting in because there's different bits of architectures from the 30s, the 50s. It's a 1950s hotel just sitting out there. As before you go up there, this fantastic Three Sisters motel. Things advertises air conditioning, perhaps TV, something. These amazing things. So there's relics there. Then underneath, as you go down, there used to be an old coal train, vertical coal train. That is a train which it's been replaced by this Swiss thing. So you can imagine how in the old days when it was an 1880s mining thing that you go on, you'd sit on it and you'd go down this thing at 70 degrees. This is a scenic lookout. And you go down and you go right down. And it used to be an old coal mine because at the bottom of the valley would be coal seams. You walk along and you can say, oh, what's that? Oh, that's coal. And what happens is people around you say, no, it's not. Coal comes from... And then you see about coal mines and essentially... Oh, I think that would be nothing more panicky for me. It's okay digging coal, but to have a kilometre of rock above you, not a kilometre, would be 800 metres. Probably half a kilometre of rock above you, sorry. As you can see, a kilometre, half a kilometre. But, it would worry me digging in. And, of course, what happened is you could dig a coal mine, but you could only dig a small... You couldn't dig the entire seam out because the entire rock would just drop down. So it's quite scary. And you look up over across the Jameson Valley. So that's if you can go down and up. And we just had a brief amount of time. The interesting thing is, I think the soundscape, when I was listening to it, I thought, I'm going to replace this with the music. Firstly, the photography is just pretty shocking handheld photography. So it's not worth doing a lot, and removing the sound of it removes the the feeling, the complete din that you've got. This is Blue Mountains. And so already when you drive up, you drive past these pretty beautiful lookouts, the Sublime Point. So this feature repeats itself. So being a fractal mathematics, the features repeat each themselves over and over again. So if you've got any feature, you can generally find a smaller and bigger feature of it and a repeated feature. This is fractal mathematics, which is to do with the entire maths of erosion. So they're up there, and so that's that first one, and just the sheer number of people and the din going on, for having come from the cultural centre coming up. And then coming up, you can go on a scenic drive, which is not so scenic, which is going back towards Sydney, or you can go the other way, which I think few people go. And as you go up, you can go up and sort of stop at Long Neck. Long Neck. So you're looking at the Jamieson Valley, which is from there. The next valley over is called the Meglong Valley. And then the next fractal repeat of the Jamieson Valley is one further north. It's called the Gross Valley. Now, these are all spectacular valleys. So you go to Long Neck. This is this line, and there's, you know, it's sort of like a stomach-curdling thing. There's this dirt track which you can drive off in a sedan car if you wanted to. A four-wheel drive perhaps would be a little bit better. You can drive along. It's all okay. You normally, if you're driving around a suburban street, you don't think, oh, I might crash into a car. But here, driving one of these tracks, you know you've got cliffs on either side, and the track is only 30 metres from side to side. So it's a suburban block, house block side. So it is sort of stomach-curdlingly. I would walk along it. I wouldn't drive along it, because it's just the most scary thing. And you can see, that's not there. You might be able to see a bit of it. You can see definitely this from Google Earth. And going up to the next one. The next one is Boar's Head Lookout. It's actually named after some dude they wanted to suck up to, which I have forgotten. I called it Boar's Head Lookout. If that's Three Sisters, the next one has to be Boar's Head. And that way, rather than looking out across the Jamieson Valley to the ruined castle, it's the same thing again. Where the Three Sisters are is the Boar's Head thing, where the ruined castle, which is that thing in the centre, you can see there's the Meglong. There's Narrow Neck to Meglong thing. It's a very spectacular thing, and then you can see the entire Meglong Valley. Now, that could have been made National Park, but they didn't get there in time, so you can see some farms and some things in the distance, and then that stretches out into the rest of Australia. And this is your 270-degree panorama. And it's intensely mathematical feeling, except there is, I was there by myself. There was one other person who went in the way. And so you go from this where you've got, it must have been 300 people all getting out of cars and chatting and all. And the interesting thing is that everyone was there, but what they were photographing was themselves. I don't quite understand that. And that had a buzz around it, and there was a lot of excitement. Everyone was extremely friendly. From different countries, we took a photograph of this Thai woman. She was very grateful and very, very... This is at Three Sisters. In this other one, it's perfectly quiet. And That being said, there are these other views. If you continue, so there's a ring road in the Blue Mountains around Grouse Valley, these long causeways, they're called. It's not a causeway across any river. It's this very thin spine of, terrifyingly thin spine of cliff that you drive along. It's okay. It's the one to the Megalong, Narrow Neck, you can actually see. This other one, the causeway, you can't see how high up you are. And then you go to Grouse Valley, absolutely sensational. You could think that you were in with the dinosaurs, these fantastic stone cliffs. It's sort of like the Grand Canyon, but with the trees. And then there's that one. It's great, sort of great views. But then if you go out of the Blue Mountains, go down the other side and up towards Mudgee, these are these cities, series of fairly small country towns. If you go up, it doesn't seem much. It looks like a little hill. Let's just go up view. But when you go up to this view, it's a jaw-dropping, breathtaking view, because it's 360. It's canyons, mountains, wild wilderness all around you. You certainly feel you are back on planet Earth and away from civilization. So this is my backup. I've spoken to 36 minutes, which is good, and that's achieved my thing. And this is sort of a backup for if you look at the little YouTube which is uploaded, what's there, and enjoy what's there. Thanks a lot for listening. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.